show me wax on, wax off.
Wax on, wax off.
Wax on, wax off. Hey, wax on, hat. Wax off, hat. Concentrate. Look in my eye. Lock a hand. Thumb inside.
Jack! Jack!
Ladies and gentlemen, this
look,
is
I always
the
look
main
up.
Event of the
Jack!
Evening.
Sand floor.
Welcome in. It is RJ Bell's Dream Preview UFC 299 edition. I am AJ Hoffman, and with me again is the man, Sleepy J. Glad to have you in, Sleepy. How you feeling? UFC 299 is upon us, and man, on paper, this is a stacked card, brother.
Well, when I saw the lineup come out, I was like, this is going to be one of the best cards maybe that I've ever seen, so super excited for this one. This is going to be an awesome weekend. You got March Madness conference tournaments kicking off. Rugby just kicked off. I don't know if you know that I love watching that sport at 2-3 in the morning. It's going to be a great weekend. This is one of the more anticipated weekends that I've had on my radar for a while.
They actually just got a rugby team out here in Vegas, so maybe you're due a trip to come check this thing out. All right. The UFC 299 is on Saturday. I think it's almost as good, if not better, really. I mean, I think it's right in the conversation with the UFC 300 card. I don't think there's a huge gap between the two at a minimum. So we've got a nice little run of fights coming here. We're going to do what we usually do. We're going to go through the main event, the co-main event, and we will take a look at best bets. And here's a little tease. There's only going to be one best bet from the entire pod because we have the same best bet. We don't talk about this stuff until right before we go on air. And it turns out that we both like the same fight quite a bit. And even better news for you guys, it's a dog. So there's some good money to be made on this one. Let's jump into it, Sleepy. Let's start with the top fight on the card. It is Sean O'Malley, the superstar himself, taking on Chito Vera, Marlon Vera, for the 135-pound title. And this is a rematch of O'Malley's first loss in his career, where he'll tell you, well, he had a fluke injury, and Vera will tell you that he kicked his legs enough that it hurt him. If you like Chito to get the job done again, seeing the best price on him right now looks like it's about plus 240. Best price on O'Malley is minus 270. I'll let you take the lead here. How do you see this fight going? Do you think that the first fight was a fluke? Do you think these guys have changed a lot since that first fight? And how do you see them matching up today?
All right, answer your question there. Fluke, yes. Have they improved? Yes. Do I think that this fight potentially could be a blowout? I think that that's very possible, yes. I like O'Malley here quite a bit. I think the price is a little bit hefty, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to put him in a parlay with a prelim fighter, Robles de Spain, and I'll also go ahead and I'll put O'Malley here in to win by points at plus 125. Much of that, I think, is because Chito hasn't been knocked out before in his career. I mean, he's had 32 fights, and to never be knocked out, I think that does say something. With O'Malley, I kind of feel like after he beat Aljo, AJ, he wins the title, and it just felt like there was like this aha type of moment, like I've arrived. And I think that O'Malley has always had plenty of buzz, but I feel like I witnessed this guy just break out and come into his own. And I think that that's going to carry him so much. I think it's going to help his confidence here. O'Malley also has revenge here, and I think that that's extremely motivating, knowing that, you know, what we were just talking about, is this a fluke or not? And I thought that it was. O'Malley was clearly hurt. Chito ended up landing a big kick to his leg there, and it pretty much just numbed O'Malley's foot, and he was basically a one-legged fighter. The plus 125 is definitely a wager that I like to go ahead and have him win here by points, but I think putting him in a parlay, because I don't want to lay minus 275, because I've been fooled before by these big chalky favorites who, you know, think are going to go out and blow guys out, and it just doesn't seem to be the case. So those are the two wagers I'm going to make here. O'Malley in a parlay with Robles de Spain, and O'Malley to go ahead and win by points. +125. I don't have anything bad to say about Chito. I guess the only thing I can say is, like, when you look at his resume, right, I see a lot of aging fighters on there, and he beat all those guys. But then I see the younger talent, like a Sandhagen, probably going to end up being like an O'Malley outside of, you know, the injury. And they're just, they result in losses for Chito. So I think the step up when he gets to the top of the food chain there, it's just not good for Chito. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to bet O'Malley here. I really don't want any part of Chito Vera.
I agree with what you said about the aging fighters, because obviously Pedro Munhoz, certainly no longer the young Punisher, despite that being his nickname. Dominic Cruz was obviously a shadow of Dominic Cruz. Frankie Edgar, the same thing. The Rob Font win was impressive, but you've seen him against Song Yadong, who is, you know, a young, hungry beast who happens to also be on this card. He was overmatched. And I'm in the belief that, in a way, was the win fluky for Chito? Yes. But at the same time, Sean O'Malley didn't slip on a banana peel. Like, he got his leg beat up and he was compromised. Like, he numbed his foot and he was compromised. And that happens in fighting sometimes. And I do think that it's repeatable. So I think that's why it's probably why, because I could see Chito just going in there and leg kicking him as much as he can and trying to punish that front leg and having some success with it, which is why I don't want to lay the -275 either. I do think O'Malley wins, but I'm going to go on the other side of you because I'm going to say that this fight, I'm going to go under 4.5 rounds here at +135. So I get plus money on it, I guess. So the expectation is this thing does go to a decision, but I'm going to go ahead and say that it doesn't, because we've got two paths to this. One, we see O'Malley wanting to make a big statement after losing to this guy, and, you know, maybe hunting a little more for the knockout than he normally would to try to avenge that one loss. And on the other side, if Chito's win was legit, then he's got a good chance to finish him too. And the other thing to consider is O'Malley's never been into the championship rounds of a fight. So when you talk about going into the fourth round and then the fifth round, it's not that I think he doesn't have the cardio for it, but I do think that it's always interesting to fight an extra 10 minutes longer than you're used to fighting. Maybe he decides at one point to take some more chances because the gas tank is in a different place than it's used to being. And the truth about O'Malley and Aljamain Sterling, what he did to him was impressive. I didn't see that coming. I was big on Aljo in that fight, and kudos, credit where it's due. It was a great win for O'Malley. And I'm not one of these guys that believes O'Malley's some kind of flash in the pan or he's not that good. Like, his striking is legitimately incredible. But I also look back and say, when he fought Petr Yan, he won a split decision. He lost that fight. Like, you can't convince me otherwise. He lost that fight. So I'm in a weird spot here. I think I'm just going to stick with the under 4.5 rounds and kind of hedge my bets and hope that one of these two guys gets something done early. Either O'Malley comes out ultra aggressive and ends the fight early, or he comes out ultra aggressive and Chito makes him pay. So I'm going to go under 4.5 rounds just because I think 25 minutes is a lot to ask from a guy who's never done it.
I love your counter argument there because it makes a lot of sense. Because as I was writing down O'Malley +125 to go ahead and win by points, I was thinking of exactly what you were thinking about. I'm like, you're looking at it from a different way to handicap. I'm looking at it from a stats perspective, and you're looking at it more from like a motivational type of edge. And that's that was the counter argument I was making against the wager as I was writing it down. So,
all right. It's going to be a fun fight no matter what. So even if you don't have a lot of skin in the game, as they say, it will be worth a watch, as will this one. The co-main event, I think, is awesome, man. Benoit Saint-Denis taking on Dustin Poirier. I don't know what the implications are from like a title standpoint. I mean, Dustin Poirier at his age may have come and gone by now. Like, he may not get another title shot. Saint-Denis is certainly on the rise, 5 straight wins, unbeaten at lightweight. Remember, he came in on short notice as a welterweight and got almost beat to death. Referee made some terrible decisions and let the fight go on way longer than it should have. But since that fight, he's just been an absolute force. And it's kind of guys, ships passing in the night, right? Like Saint-Denis is a guy who's on the rise. Dustin Poirier is a guy who we've probably seen the best of. And the odds reflect that, as the best number you can get on Benoit Saint-Denis is minus 205 now. The best comeback line on Poirier, if you like him, looks like it's plus 190 over at Caesars, at least the best line I can see on my board. I'll ask you, is this a passing of the torch fight? Do you think that Benoit Saint-Denis establishes himself going from a prospect that everybody's excited about to an actual legitimate title contender? And do you think this is the end of Poirier's run as a top flight lightweight?
My gut feeling says no. And the reason I say that here is that I haven't seen Poirier go into any fight probably over the last 2-3 years where it looks like he's ready to pass that torch. Like, he always comes in ready. He always comes in confident. So going into this handicap, I thought about that for like a brief second. I'm like, when has Dustin ever went in there and looked old, looked slow, looked not confident? And then I watch all the after fight stuff too. And he always sounds like, win or lose, you know, I'm coming back and I'm ready to go. Like you're going to get the best version of me always. So for some reason, I just don't feel that going into this fight, but I think it's a good question to bring up.
My concern with Dustin Poirier is this. If you go back over his last five fights, he is, even if you go back to when he lost to Khabib for the title, so like since then he's had six fights. One of those, the first one was a win over Dan Hooker, a 5-round decision win, good clean fight. Dan Hooker's a good fighter. I mean, it's a solid win. He beat Conor McGregor twice in a 6-month span, and Conor McGregor at that point, you know, in 2021, I don't know how seriously he was taking MMA, to be totally honest. I don't know what kind of opponent he was at that point. Then he lost to Charles Oliveira at UFC 269. Then he beat Michael Chandler, which, I mean, you want to talk about what Michael Chandler's done lately? He's lost three of his last four. His only win was against Tony Ferguson, the ghost of Tony Ferguson, who, by the way, beat the shit out of him in round one. So, you know, Dustin Poirier beat Michael Chandler. And then he lost to Justin Gaethje in a fight where I think we talked about this fight at UFC 291. It seemed, at least on paper, that Dustin Poirier was the much more skilled guy and Justin Gaethje was going to be the tougher guy. But I think we both thought that Dustin Poirier was going to be the better man on that night, and he just wasn't. So I think it's safe to question if Dustin Poirier at 35 years old has hit that wall. And one thing I know is, Benoit Saint-Denis is in his prime. I mean, this guy looks like an absolute savage. What he did to, and again, now this is on the other side of that coin. We're talking about the guys that Dustin Poirier fought and how maybe they aren't what they once were. I mean, you're seeing a lot of these guys on Saint-Denis' resume that you're like, who? Nicholas Stolza and Thiago Moises. Okay, solid win. Matt Frivola. Ishmael Bonfim was probably the nicest win on his resume, but certainly no one on the level of Dustin Poirier. I'm going to, again, kind of hedge my bet here. I know that Saint-Denis is a finisher. I know he wants to get out of there as quickly as possible. He hasn't had a fight go into round three since his first loss, since that loss in the to Dos Santos in his first UFC fight. And in fact, that's only one of two times in his entire career that he's gone to round three. He wants to get in there, get the job done one way or the other. And if Poirier is fading at all, I mean, I don't think this thing goes to the decision. So I'm going to look at this fight again, under 2.5 rounds. You can get it at minus 135. I actually like it quite a bit. And that way, if Poirier's for real and Saint-Denis overmatched, I think we'll find out pretty quickly, particularly on the feet. I think Dustin Poirier is a very hard guy to finish on the ground. But I do think that if this is as much of a mismatch as I think it could end up being, I think it ends early. And I think Poirier realizes, like, he's going to have to, it's going to be hard for him to win a decision in this fight because the pressure and the aggression of Saint-Denis is going to be coming at him. I think both guys are looking for finishes, and I think somebody gets one. So I'm going to like the under 2.5 rounds here.
I like that one too. I went ahead and I played this one to go an ending KO at +125. So it sounds like we're kind of both tracking here.
Yep.
I mean, they are sending Poirier to war with a warrior. I mean, if you watch Saint-Denis, I mean, the dude's just an absolute savage. And I think that that's what concerns me on his side is that maybe he just gets a little overzealous. And we know Poirier has pinpoint boxing. He has a ton of power. He's KO'd plenty of guys before. And I just worry if Saint-Denis just go ahead and he just gets a little overzealous and Dustin catches him because he does have that power. So I have to respect that with Poirier. And then with Saint-Denis, it's one of those situations for me when I look at him, it's you have never fought like these type of dudes before. Like, yeah, you're out there kicking Matt Frivol in the head, knocking him out. Like, those are nice wins. And he's taken these guys out, you know, rather quickly. But there is a difference, right? I mean, you know these fighters. You watch these all the time. When you get to the top and you face these guys that have had that experience, they can do things to you that we've never seen before with you. And you kind of sometimes look a little pedestrian. So I worry about that, but I do respect Saint-Denis' power. And he's a guy that I wanted to go ahead and probably back, I don't know, maybe like the last two fights I messed with him, I had him, and I was thinking maybe I can get a couple more out of him. But it just seems like they shot put him right up here to Poirier. So I'm hesitant to go ahead and bet him. But I think that we're going to see nothing but power in this one. So I like the KO +125. I think that's the way this one ends. I like the fact that you like this one under. So I feel pretty comfortable now about my pick.
All right. Let's tell the people how they can save some money at pregame before we get into our best bet, our double best bet.
First time double best bet ever on the podcast. If you guys are looking to go ahead and cash in, make sure you guys get over to pregame.com. AJ will have his UFC 299 package up there, and you guys could save $15 on that and anything else at pregame.com as well. All you have to do is enter code KICK15. That's KICK15, KICK15. Save $15 there off anything at pregame.com. Have you noticed, are the handicappers at pregame.com right now putting up March Madness college basketball packages yet?
Oh yeah, I mean everybody's jumping on that. In fact, I'm getting ready to record the big pod, the Dream Preview tonight, and we've got a coupon basically for March Madness packages. Seems like everybody's going to have a big March Madness package up. So I'm on a nice little roll here betting college hoops. So it's been a really, really good season for me on that front. So hopefully it continues through through March Madness. But as of right now, I'm at +78 units for the season in college hoops. So and looks like I've got a couple more coming my way as we record this right now. And Belmont's just smashing Valparaiso. So I might be at 80 units by the time people hear this podcast. So it's been a good season for me. There's tons of guys over at pregame you can check out, including my podcast partner for the College Hoops Pod, Griffin Warner, does a very good job on the hoops. He's up 25 plus units this season. So some good action to get over there at pregame.com.
Well, I thought I was having a good college basketball season. I was in the green a little bit, so I was feeling pretty good, but I did not have any idea that you were up almost 80 units. I mean, some guys, they don't do that in their career. Some guys can't do that in a couple seasons, but simply amazing. So again, go to pregame.com, enter that code KICK15, save $15 off any package at pregame.com.
All right, let's get into it. And like I said, we have the same best bet, which I'm actually excited about this. We're both going to go with Dorinho, Gilbert Burns, as a dog. You can get him. The best price I'm seeing on him is +155 at Circa. That's what I bet him at. And he's a dog everywhere. The worst number you can get on him is like +132, 135, it looks like. So lots of value out there on Gilbert Burns. I'll let you take the honors here. What do you like about Gilbert here?
I thought you were going to be totally against this pick, and I rethought this. I went to go pick up my daughter, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to give out Burns because I know AJ well enough that for some reason he's probably going to be on the opposite side of this pick. And then when you told me right before the podcast, I'm like, you got to be shitting me. Like, he's got Burns too. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'll go ahead. I'll give it out because I do. I like this one quite a bit. And the odds to me, they don't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, I could see maybe maybe a pick'em line. You know, you could have JDM maybe like a minus 110, minus 115, you know, respectable. But minus 175 just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Like I was just talking about with St. Denis, JDM hasn't seen the top of the food chain yet. But, you know, he's working his way up. Give the guy credit. He did go three rounds with Kevin Holland. And I wouldn't necessarily say Holland's top of the food chain. He's more of a gatekeeper type. But I did think Jack won that one. But it wasn't nothing that really impressed me or convinced me a whole lot. And then I look at Gilbert and I'm thinking, you know, he was absolutely hurt against Bilal Muhammad. And I think that took a lot of steam out of him. Not only do I think his legs were beat up, but obviously his shoulder was just trashed. Couldn't throw a punch. Couldn't do anything. And he was in a lot of wars. But I think that experience with those top level fighters will really help him here. I think he can use his ground game here. I know he's kind of limited with some of his strikes, but he has a ton of power. And I think Maddaleno will be able to go ahead and kind of keep him away a little bit. But eventually, I think the experience is going to play out here with Gilbert. And I think that there's a potential where we don't see Gilbert in these type of fights anymore. If he loses this one, he's going to end up down there, you know, fighting. I mean, there's a lot of names that aren't really names. I guess I could say it that way. I think that that's the trajectory where Burns goes if he loses this fight. And for Maddaleno, who knows? You know, he could find himself in a title fight here really, really quick. So the motivation for me is it's kind of split down the middle, but it's more experience with me. I think Burns is going to make one final push. I think he's going to be healthy. And I think he fights the fight that gets him a win here, and he's going to follow that path along and not stray too far away. And also, this is in Miami, right? Like, I think Burns is going to have so much fan backing in this one versus Maddaleno. Like, Maddaleno is going to come in here like he's the villain here. I don't think he's going to get much support at all. So I think it'll be an enjoyable week for Burns in a week that would normally be tough for a lot of fighters. I could see a lot of support here. So, yeah, it's Gilbert Burns for me. I'll take the plus money. I think the odds are one of the reasons why I'm going ahead and taking Gilbert. But I also think that there is a path for him to go ahead and beat Jack Maddaleno. So that's where I'm at.
I think when we look at Gilbert Burns and when he made that move up to welterweight and he became the title contender there, he fought Kamaru Usman and really hurt him early in that fight. If you remember it, I mean, I guess it's been a while, but he was really close to becoming the champion of that division. And I don't know how much is really holding him back other than, you know, maybe the fact that he's getting a little bit older. But Jack Della Maddalena, this is not the kind of guy that Gilbert Burns is going to be intimidated to be in there with. Remember, he took a short notice fight against Khamzat Chimaev, who is like the most terrifying man in the world, and gave him really the only fight that anyone's ever given him. Like, it was the first time that Chimaev didn't look like just a juggernaut. Like, he looked like maybe he was beatable. Some people thought he did beat him. I think that his stock went up in that fight. And then the Stephen Thompson fight was in between there, a handy win for him. He smashed Neil Magny. He didn't look as great as I thought he would against Masvidal. But then the Muhammad fight, I think we have to kind of take with a grain of salt, like you said. I think he gets hurt early in that fight. It was never really – he didn't really have a chance to compete there.
Didn't he take that fight on short notice too with Bilal? I mean, he was coming off. I know he was coming off with some nasty weight cuts with the fight you just mentioned, but wasn't Bilal kind of short notice?
Maybe
too?
He did. Maybe it was. I know it was a quick turnaround. Like, it wasn't long after the Masvidal fight. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was planned or not, to be honest, off the top of my head. But I do think that Burns is going to want to make this a grappling match, and if he does, I think he controls it. So I could see Burns even getting a finish here. My thought was when this card was announced, I said, that's probably a pick'em. I bet maybe Maddaleno is like a minus 120, something like that, because, you know, he's the hot prospect and people want to bet on him. Plus 155 is an absurd number. It's a disrespectful number, and it's making it seem like that Jack Della is Khamzat Chimaev. And he's not that. So give me Gilbert Burns here. Again, this is more about value than anything else to me. Like, I wouldn't take this bet if I didn't think he wins at least as often as he loses. But at plus 155, that's all I really need. If this is a pick 'em fight and I'm getting plus 155, I feel really good about my position on it. So Gilbert Burns, double best bet for the pod. And you're right. If Gilbert Burns loses this at age 37, like, we can probably forget about just, you know, Gilbert Burns being like a title contending or even a top prospect getting type of fighter. He may not be long for UFC pay-per-view main cards if he were to fall here. So I think he is good enough to take the hype train and turn it around on Jack Della Maddalena. So especially given what Maddalena's last fight looked like against Basil Hafez, it was like a short notice guy. You're like, it was supposed to be a, I don't know. It was a couple of things. Like he just never really got anything going. He didn't really have an answer to the wrestling.
He hasn't looked in the last two fights like he looked prior to that fight.
Yeah. And the truth is, Burns is a lot better than Kevin Holland. Like, Kevin Holland's he's a dangerous fighter, but it's not like he's some technically sound fighter. Like, Jack Della Maddalena is probably going to beat up guys like Kevin Holland for his whole career. Mm-hmm. Gilbert Burns is like a professional. This dude he's good everywhere. He's great on the mat. I think this is a disrespectful number. So I'm going to be back in Burns in this one. All right. That's going to do it, boys. Appreciate you guys taking the time to listen. Hope you guys are all going to watch UFC 299 with us, and hope you're ready for UFC 300, which we're going to jump on, next month. And I'm stoked for this one, Sleepy. It's going to be fun. And we'll probably do an extended episode for UFC 300 to make a big show of it. I think we can probably do at least that for the people.
Yeah, I don't know how long that show is going to be based on the early prelims, the prelims, and the main card. I mean, that card's just, it's insane. I mean, you could do three podcasts with all those fights. I mean, you got dudes that are fighting for titles almost most recently on the prelim card. So that's going to be... It's going to be awesome.
Bo Nickel, who might be the most unstoppable man in UFC, is fighting on the prelims. It's wild. All right, Sleepy, appreciate you as always. Thanks to you guys for listening. Enjoy the fights and good luck with your wagers.